It's Thursday, September 10th, 2015, and the very first NFL game of the 2015 season is going down tonight, the Steelers and the Patriots. But we're here today on Real in the Field Goals to talk about the Seahawks. We've got Joe McAtee from the Turf Show Times to help us preview the Rams game as they prepare to play the Rams in St. Louis at 10 a.m. on Sunday. But at first, as usual, got to let you know that Real in the Field Goals is brought to you by the Ballard Agency. Now, I gave you an amazing jingle last week that I know is stuck in all your heads, but there is a problem. It was the wrong phone number. So I just got one digit wrong, and that my mom pointed it out. She's listening to this right now, I'm sure. But my mom was like, oh, actually, it's this. And so I got to make sure that you know that. And I'm not going to say what the bad number was. I'm just going to get right into the correct number this time around. So remember, the Ballard Agency, call them at 425-454-3510. The Ballard Agency and BallardAgency.com. It's an insurance agent in Kirkland with over 50 years of experience, family run, family owned, and, you know, looking for more people that if you have your own business, you need insurance. You know, me and Danny practically have a business right here with Real in the Field Goals. Isn't that right, Danny?
That's absolutely correct.
And including our radio network that is, also includes several other podcasts, really trying to grow and expand. So, maybe one day we'll need to call the Ballard Agency and get some insurance here. We don't do it now because we don't have any what? Money. That's right. We don't have any money, so we don't have anything to insure really at this point. But if we did, we'd go to BallardAgency.com or we'd call 425-454-3510 and tell them that Field Goals sent you. I'm a good pitch man. I'm just going to throw that out there.
You've improved markedly over the last You're very good.
Thank you. So do that. On to the show. So, as we were saying, there is an umbrella under our new radio network. What did we call it? DK Radio Network?
K&D Radio.
K&D Radio. But what we really want to know is that K&D Radio will be the umbrella for several of our podcasts, which includes Real in the Field Goals, the Real in the Field Goals Instant Reaction, which happens right after the games. And that'll be a shorter podcast than, you know, so you gotta get both of those. But we should say that if you are currently subscribed to Real in the Field Goals and you're listening to this right now, you may have noticed that you also got a download of Deep Balls with Danny and Jackson. And that is going to actually be, if you're subscribed to this, you're going to be subscribed to that. And then we're going to be moving Real in the Field Goals to another feed. It'll still be Real in the Field Goals, but you'll have to search it out and subscribe again. And we thank you for going along with us on this journey of having to do that. But in the long run, it's going to be the best thing for us.
Yeah. Long story short, we had to switch up some of our, where we store all our podcasts because we're doing so many different shows now. So that's the bottom line. Thanks for resubscribing to the new show. Keep this one going if you want to listen to NFL picks every week with Jackson and I.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure to write all this in the post as well. So look for that on Field Goals.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it's time to subscribe to Real and Field Goals again, it'll be, you know, sometime next week, and we'll let you know. Right now you can subscribe to 3000 NFL Mock Draft. That comes out Mondays. It's me and Rob Staton of Seahawks Draft Blog talking college football, the NFL draft, the Seahawks, all that stuff. You can go to on iTunes right now or in your podcast app, search 3000 NFL Mock Draft or just 3000 NFL. There isn't any other show that has the word 3000 in NFL in the title. So just search for 3000 NFL, subscribe to that, and you'll get that every week, and it's going to be a good time. We're going to try and mix it up and get some questions from the audience, from fans, you know, for Rob, and some guests in the future. So do that. And on to the Seahawks and the game this week against the Rams. We have a real game. It's going to count. And that means that, Tyler Lockett's next punt return touchdown is actually going to go in the books. And I don't think it's going to take very long for that to happen. Is there a thing going on with the Rams game that specifically you're most excited to see?
That I'm most excited to see? Yeah, I think Lockett is definitely up there in terms of one of the things I'll be looking forward to, and also Frank Clark. We talked to Joe McAtee a little later in the show, and he talks about how, you know, the Rams offensive line is kind of in the similar situation as the Seahawks, if not maybe worse, in that they're starting two rookies and have been flip-flopping people around all preseason. They're kind of trying to figure out their starting five. And you could really see Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett, and, you know, the other guys like Frank Clark and Jordan Hill kind of eat on Sunday. So that'll be really interesting to me. If they could do that, then, you know, they're going to play their style of ball. They won't have to score too many points on offense. And I could see this being kind of one of those normal Seattle, St. Louis, like 16-13 games.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I think, again, this game could come down to special teams. But hopefully this week it'll be in Seattle's favor, not them screwing up several stupid special teams plays. I'm just really looking forward to it. It's going to be great to finally have something that counts. I'm kind of sick of preseason at this point. It's funny how, like, you get so excited for preseason, and then by, like, week two, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, it's – yeah, exactly. And then – especially, yeah, the last couple weeks have been – at least week three was an exciting game, and they did get to see some cool stuff there. And then, obviously, Tyler Lockett had three touchdowns in three different games. And one of the other things that's interesting is, you know, that when you have so many interesting, like, rookies and other kinds of performances, and when starters don't play that much in the preseason, you kind of forget that Jimmy Graham is on this team. You know, like, that was – he's now here. So I'm very – yeah, I'm very excited the fact that we get to see Jimmy Graham play against the Rams, and it's going to be a full game of Jimmy Graham, you know, Graham and the Rams. He's going to be Graham and them Rams, Ram Graham, call Ram Graham. And I'm looking forward to JG, you know, Wentworth getting out there and just kicking some ass. I think that there were the flash, like in the first game when you first saw Jimmy Graham in a uniform and he caught his first pass, it was like, holy shit, this is for real. Yeah. And now it is going to be for real.
In the field goals.
Yeah. It's going to be for real in the field goals podcast radio network.
It's funny that you said that, because I actually totally forgot Jimmy Graham was on the team. He hasn't really played much in the preseason.
Right.
And there's been so much other drama with, you know, Cam Chancellor, and then obviously all the good stuff around Tyler Lockett. There's been a bunch of drama around Frank Clark, and now good stuff around Frank Clark. It's just been, you know, he's actually – it's weird that he's been so under the radar. It's like, oh, I totally forgot they have, like, one of the top touchdown makers in the NFL over the last, like, 3 years. Like, it's like getting Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. So –
thing, like, it is like getting Dez Bryant. If we had gotten Dez Bryant, I think people would be even more excited. But just real
receivers, I mean, are sexier, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's but in reality, this is just as big as getting Dez Bryant. It's that big.
I mean, yeah, unlike he's almost had as many touchdowns, I think, as Dez over the last couple of years. So
right,
just on a touchdown scoring level, it's huge. And I think that his skill set will match up well with Russell Wilson. I think, obviously, the Percy Harvin thing didn't really work, and they kind of tried to make it work, but it just didn't naturally kind of fit together.
Uh-huh.
But I think the Jimmy Graham thing fits with Russell Wilson's kind of style and skill set really well. So, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, so you brought it up. Cam Chancellor not playing this week. I guess at any point the news could break that he would come back, but he's still not going to play this week. Any thoughts on how sort of what you know, you're a guy that's analyzed a lot of tape, especially on the Seahawks, what you know about what Cam Chancellor brings to the table. And we're just talking schematically because, he is the leader as well, but just schematically, what does he bring to the table as a strong safety, and what do the Rams do that would make his absence either better or worse? I mean, not necessarily better, but if there's something that Cam Chancellor does, like, let's say, for example, that Cam Chancellor's best strength is stopping the tight end. The Rams don't have a huge threat at tight end. Jared Cook is okay, but
right.
How big is that loss going to be felt in this week against the Rams?
Well, I mean, I think Cam Chancellor's really good. He's really, really good. It's not just because he's an intimidator and he sets the tone, and that obviously is a big deal too. But when the Seahawks play their three deep, four under defense, which is, you know, this free safety and two corners drop deep, and then you have, either three linebackers and a safety kind of dropping into zones, or you have two linebackers, a safety, and a nickelback dropping into zones. Cam is really good in that intermediate zone. You know, first of all, he's very instinctive. We saw him pick six Cam Newton last year. We saw him pick six, or not pick six, but we saw him pick Peyton Manning near the end zone last year. He's just really instinctive in getting in throwing lanes, knowing where routes are going and kind of reading the quarterback's eyes in the passing game. I wouldn't say he's necessarily a top, like, one-on-one man covers guy. I mean, I think he's good at that, but I think that's not necessarily his you know, top attribute. I think he's a really good eyes in the backfield defender in terms of he knows how to pick up crossing routes. We saw that in the Super Bowl when he knocked Demaryius Thomas on his ass. He's, you know, very instinctive in that way. So I think that's kind of what they miss. And I think Deion Bailey is probably, I mean, definitely not as good at him as him at that. And that's going to be kind of, you know, one way that it kind of drops off. But that said, I think what Bailey will bring is a lot of oomph in the run game. I mean, he's not Cam Chancellor. He's not 6'4", 230, but he flies around and hits really hard. So he brings that kind of attitude. And I think that will be really good in terms of, you know, replacing him for the time being. I think that Bailey has played linebacker and safety, so he kind of knows how to stop the run. He knows where to fit into gaps and how that works. And he's been in the Seahawks, Pete Carroll's system, I should say, for a while. So I think he knows how it works. And so I think he's a good, like, on paper, he's a good fit to replace Cam for this couple of weeks or however long Cam was out.
Yeah, it is wild that, you know, when we had a conversation, I think a week or two ago about the guys making the team, and it was like you were most surprised by Deion Bailey, and now he's the starting strong safety just by default. I mean, that's the guy that we never would have thought would have made the roster, and now he's starting in Cam Chancellor's spot. And, you know, possibly will, with what you know about the Cam Chancellor situation, and in addition to what you feel about the Cam Chancellor situation, what do you think is going to be what do you think is going to happen? Can I say some words? Can I make sentence? Yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, like, to be honest with you, I kind of went on record saying he wasn't going to hold out games. And so I've already been really surprised that he's kind of taken it this far. I thought that whole, like, deadlines for action thing would work. I didn't think he would want to leave his teammates kind of hanging. But I guess it's looking like he's a lot more serious than I kind of thought in terms of willingness to sit out games. And, you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, you hear rumors and things like that. You can't confirm any of it, but it kind of feels like even his teammates are pissed at him now. Or not necessarily pissed, but they're kind of like frustrated that he's not there. They understand why he's doing it, but they don't think he's doing it correctly or whatever at the right time. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think at some point he's got to decide if it's law of diminishing returns. Like, the longer he stays out, he's going to be losing more money than he's probably ever going to get back anyway. So, yeah. I mean, obviously he's not going to lose whatever $5 million over the next couple of games, but adding in some of those fines that they've had, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how long he's willing to sit out. So,
yeah, I really think
just to say, bottom line, I think he's probably coming back next week. But then again, I thought he was not going to miss any games. So,
yeah, it seems tough to think that. I really don't know what to expect. From what I've heard, I think he's gotten some bum information, and I think that he should have. Well, not he should have. I just think that maybe he got a little bit of bad advice, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how I feel as well.
Yeah. So, and at this point, when you reach a breaking point of, you know, there was a time coming a few years ago with Maurice Jones-Drew holding out. And this was like, he had just led the league in rushing the year before and was like 28 and like scared of, you know, getting hurt and not being protected. And then he held out and then came back, you know, just in time for the first game of the season, didn't win. You know, they didn't give him any more money, just had to hang his head and come back. And then, that basically was the last year of his career. He was probably right to hold out. And that was his best chance.
That's kind of scary, but yeah.
Yeah, well, there isn't a good amount of examples of guys holding out.
No, I mean, I hate that example because Cam seems like he's kind of in that same situation, like his body's given up on him. Right. So it's scary in that
right.
sense. And you're right, that's kind of a good example. Yeah.
Right, but there, unfortunately, there's been a couple. It's almost a little bit of a curse. The guys who hold out into September, they have not always responded so well, having to come in and their bodies. At the same time, you know, Walter Jones did it every year. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens, and hopefully he comes back and there isn't any ill will. And all these people on Twitter and such that are just so outraged with Cam Chancellor. And to me, it's just like, let a guy live his own life. Don't worry about it. You know, you don't own the Seahawks. You're just, it's not, it's just something that he can do what he wants to do. If a guy is a free agent, like Byron Maxwell could have stayed and like signed for less money and been on the Seahawks, you know, in the way Byron Maxwell dissed all you guys for money too. So I think that Cam can do what he wants. I just think that he might have made a bad decision. So
yeah.
Moving on. This game against the Rams, that's going to be on Sunday. You know, we can talk. There's not really any point for us to talk about tonight's game against the Patriots and Steelers. It's just not going to have any impact probably for most people when they listen to it. The game starts actually like in 10 minutes. So, if you want to know more about the week's games and pick'ems and stuff like that, make sure to listen to Deep Balls. You've already, if you're subscribed to this, you're already subscribed to it. So just don't unsubscribe. Woo-hoo. Deep Balls with Danny Kelly and Jackson Bevins. And Jackson's record of picking games is impeccable.
It's good. It's good. I'm a little bit worried I went against him on a couple of picks today, or this week. So,
yeah, especially the Redskins over the Dolphins.
Yeah, that one wasn't really on purpose, but I'm going to stick with it. I don't know why I put that. That makes absolutely no sense to me. It was like the worst game to mess up.
Yeah. If they win, that'll be fucking great.
It'll be great. Opinion. It'll be off to a good start. So,
So that's the situation there. And yeah, I don't know. Is there any other news going on with the Seahawks right now that we should address before we get to Joe?
Well, let's see. Not a whole lot. I mean, the Cam Chancellor thing has been at the front of everyone's mind. I think Marshawn Lynch is being a little bit funny with the whole wearing the Cam Chancellor jersey to practice. I don't know what that's all about. Like, you know, is that kind of a jab at the front office, or is that just showing support? You know, because Marshawn, he's had his moments over the years in terms of kind of being a rebel against the front office and everything. So, and the media. So I don't know. It was just kind of an interesting thing. I guess it's funny for the most part, but
what do you think of, everything goes so well on the field that we just kind of assume that everything's going so well in the locker room. What do you think of the Seahawks locker room?
This is a group of really unique alpha males, and a lot of them have a chip on their shoulder and have a history of kind of, you know, speaking their mind. And so the bottom line is that this team is kind of like a circus. I give so much credit to Pete Carroll for never breaking rank in the media and talking badly about any of these players, because I know for a fact there's like diva crap going on in the locker room at almost like all times. Like over the last 3 years, like I've heard a lot of rumors. Obviously I can't substantiate it because I'm not there, but heard a lot of rumors of funny crap that goes on with players, and Pete Carroll's managed it so well. You know, so because like last year we didn't really hear about the Percy stuff till after he was gone, right?
Yeah.
So imagine all the stuff you don't hear about when players are sticking around. Obviously Percy was a special case, but I think, you know, with Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Doug Baldwin, Russell Wilson's kind of a weird guy. Obviously this Cam Chancellor stuff, Marshawn Lynch. You know, there's just a laundry list of guys in the locker room who kind of march to the beat of their own drum, or whatever the expression is. It's interesting. So my main thing is credit to Pete Carroll, man, for holding all this together. That's kind of like, you know, he's a little bit of the godfather in terms of keeping it all together. So,
yeah, I mean, credit to you, because the phrase is indeed march to the beat of your own drum. So You nailed it.
No, I always get that one wrong. I don't know why.
Drum to the march of your own beat. Yeah, and the other thing being, like, as we said about this locker room, everything that I've ever heard is that Cam Chancellor really is the glue. So,
right.
You know, not to bring an evil in here, and not, I don't know if I'm going to get some hate for saying it, but is there a chance that you think that in the beginning of this week we see the house start to fall apart without the glue?
No, I don't think so. I actually think, it's hard to know because winning kind of heals everything, right? Winning solves everything. If they win this week, it won't be a big deal. If they lose this week, you could see some drama start going on. And obviously last year, we saw the Seahawks, they started out 6-4. This was coming off the Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
There was a lot of sort of trials and tribulations they had to go to before they had that come to Jesus meeting. And, to me, it's not out of the realm of possibility that something like that could happen again. I mean, these are a bunch of type A personalities, chips on their shoulders. Generally, you got like Marshawn, who apparently hates all authority figures. And, it's just like, it's just an interesting dynamic in that locker room, I think. And, I'm not saying that it's a house of cards, because I think that's, overstating it. But I think Pete Carroll definitely kind of has to be delicate about managing everything, because there's just so many different personalities. That said, I think he's done a really good job of it, because, you'll see the Seahawks, from a mental point of view, are very kind of a unique team. And then they're very confident, and they all sort of echo his messaging about, like, taking it one day at a time, taking it one week at a time. Blah, 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 stay in the moment, like only control what you can control, or only worry about what you control. So I think he's done a good job with all that.
Yeah, maybe it's not a house of cards, but it's definitely a Narcos. Sorry, everybody.
Both great shows, but yeah.
Yeah, it's so it is an interesting situation. I always forget that they were 6-4 last year. It's insane how much they turn around in both 2012 and 2012, 2014, and 2013, they were good all along. That is interesting. And this is, it's just such a talented team that you would have a hard time believing that they're not going to at least walk their ass backwards to 11 wins.
And that's the thing. The other thing is, my perception of everything that I've just talked about is colored by the fact that we're just getting off of a really long off season, following probably the hardest, worst loss in NFL history, potentially. So it's like, there were bound to be some trials that the team had to go through. And
don't forget the tribulations. You already said it once.
There was bound to be more tribulations as well that go along with those trials.
Yeah.
It's like they were about. It was. We all knew it was gonna be hard. Like mentally.
That's what she said.
So. Once the season gets going, kind of all bets are off, clean slate. But right now, it's just kind of like, man, it's just like one thing after another with the Seahawks in terms of drama.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the drama ends soon, especially with Cam Chancellor, if he can get back by week two against the Packers, that would be phenomenal. Let's go to this interview with Joe McAtee of Turf Show Times, talking about the Rams so that we can get sort of a better idea of what Seattle is up against. Do you want to say anything about the audio quality?
Yeah, I'm going to try and work with it a little bit, but for the first like 3 minutes or so, 3 or 4 minutes, Joe comes in a little hot mic. but we end up fixing that as it goes along. So just bear with us for the first few minutes.
Yes, bear with us. Bear with me, which is something that I say on all my first dates. Here's Joe. Reel in the field goals. We're here with Joe Manatee from Turf Show Times. And, Joe McAtee. And
you had it right.
Okay.
I'm all man, Kenny.
Joe Manatee. And he's here. He's a huge fucking Rams fan. He just loves the shit out of him. So
he's gonna, you know, he's gonna come in. We're gonna ask him some questions as the Seahawks prepare to play in St. Louis, a place they lost last year. We're gonna see if they can fix that this year. You know, obviously fix it for our side, not so much Joe's side. He's hoping for some more trickeration on the special teams to get himself a cheap win. So. So,
this is how we treat all our guests, apparently.
So, Joe, obviously, one place that you guys are going to have an advantage, everyone at least expects it to be this way, is on the defensive line going against the Seahawks offensive line. There's the two big guys, which is Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn, you know, two guys that could be all pros this year. But going on some of the new guys, how are some of the other guys looking so far, specifically maybe Nick Fairley and maybe some of those other guys that are going to be competing up there?
Yeah, it's funny you use like the special teams trickery as an intro to the actual strength of the team. Earlier on Twitter today, I saw somebody that the NFL had tweeted out the fake punt at the end of the game, and they tweeted, "Man, I hope this happens again this year." And I wrote back, "Why would you want it to come down to a fourth down fake punt at the end of the fourth? You should be wanting to be up two touchdowns. How to win football games anymore? Most people don't have to do this, right?" Well, what would you like to do? I want to win it with the defensive line. We got 5 first-rounders on the defensive line, man.
Right.
We should fake punting with 2.5 minutes or whatever to win football games. And what's funny about it is that so much of the Rams' history over the last couple of years is about the way that they've lost and won games and not about any consistency of talent on the team. Obviously, when you look at quarterback, certainly at running back, blatantly at wide receiver and offensive line. The one that should stand out would be the defensive line, and I just have concerns. Like last year in the preseason, they struggled against the first-team units they faced in the preseason, especially Game 3 against Green Bay, and then they went on that 5-game streak where they had the least sacks in the history of the NFL to open the season through 5 games. Similarly this year, no sacks through the preseason, so the talent's there, and everybody knows that. I mean, you said it. It's Brockers, Fairley, Donald, Robert Quinn, Chris Long, and two of the best backup defensive ends in the league, and William Hayes and Eugene Sims. I just worry that it's going to take some time for it to come together, and because other teams know the strength of the Rams' defensive line, they're going to game plan around it.
Okay, so with that being said, how is Nick Fairley looking?
I mean, the returns early on aren't great, but I think he's got the lowest expectations out of the 5, right? I mean, there's a reason why Detroit wasn't all that committed to keeping him around. The Rams didn't have a huge need for him. It was kind of a luxury purchase for an offseason in a team that made some luxury purchases on defense the last year, trading for Mark Barron from Tampa, where they already had starting safeties in Rodney McLeod and T.J. McDonald, adding Akeem Ayers at linebacker when Jawan Dunbar has been a serviceable free agent, and they drafted Alec Ogletree, and then they bring in Akeem Ayers. So Fairley's looked all right. I think the difference is it's going to take him some time to acclimate to the rest of the line, and the fact that the Rams don't really need him puts him in a pretty luxurious position. I don't know that week 1 or even up through week 6 when the Rams have a bye is really going to be the period for Nick Fairley to shine, but I think after that is when we may see what they can get out of him and kind of his peak production with the Rams.
So obviously on this defensive line, that's kind of the strength of the defense. What is, in your mind, the main hole on the Rams defense? What are you most concerned about there?
I'm just concerned about how the cornerbacks play, especially when Greg Williams dials up some of those more exotic blitzes. What you'll see, and I think we're going to see it again on Sunday, is that the Rams like to leave their corners pretty far off the line. We call it the cushion of death. When you bring those blitzes, especially because Greg Williams likes to bring 7 guys sometimes, you'll see that, you know, Janoris Jenkins or E.J. Gaines, who's now hurt for the year but was really productive last year, or Trumaine Johnson, they'll be playing guys 6 yards off and gives them this huge cushion to be able to beat the blitz and get to the next play, and it just seems kind of pointless. But I think that's just part of the strategy, is that the Rams want to keep the entire tempo slowed against opposing offenses and keep everything in front of them in the center of the field and force you to get bored with 3, 4, 5, 6 yard pickups until you lose your discipline and make a mistake.
I'm looking over the Rams 2015 roster as it stands right now, and it's a little bit, especially on offense, oddly constructed. Not necessarily bad, but you know, I'll let you sort of give us a relay of how you think it looks, but 6 running backs and just 2 tight ends, keeping a 3rd quarterback, you know, and then the receiver group is an interesting one in that I'm not exactly sure how the depth is going to work. If you were going to rank this, the six receivers, which is Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey, Kenny Britt, Chris Givens, Bradley Marquez, who I know nothing about, and Brian Quick, how would you sort of rank the way that they're going to get targets this year?
It's such a ringing endorsement of Jeff Fisher's tenure that that's the offense that we've built over 4 years. I'd say Brian Quick is probably in a class by himself as the best natural talent as a traditional wide receiver. He's got a big frame. His first four games last year were actually four of the best games of any wide receiver since The Greatest Show on Turf. But he got hurt. It was a pretty significant upper body injury to his shoulder and his arm. So we're going to have to see if he's really back to 100% or if it's going to take him a while to be able to trust himself and, you know, work those kind of push-offs underneath the referee's vision that, you know, good wide receivers know how to use their body frame accordingly. Probably the second tier, I'd put Tavon Austin by himself, only because he's got playmaking ability. He had two great plays in the preseason, one in game one, one in game four, where his change of direction, his acceleration is just, it's elite. The problem is he relies on plays getting set up for him. He doesn't break tackles. He doesn't have great jukes, great spin moves, like if you saw Braxton Miller against Virginia Tech on Monday. He's not the kind of guy to elude. He's not elusive, but he's just got great speed. And if he's able to change field and you set up a wall of blockers, he can take advantage of that. Then I'd probably put the rest of them in the same bucket, Stedman Bailey, Kenny Britt, Chris Givens, who's a little bit more of a deep threat than anything else, and Bradley Marquez, who's kind of a light Tavon Austin clone. Really athletic guy. He played baseball as well at Texas Tech and had a very productive preseason, but he's the kind of guy where you're just going to use him on screens and drag routes and hope that his athleticism can create some yards after the catch. I don't think this is a finished product by any means. It's better than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago in St. Louis, but certainly it's not a wide receiving core that anybody's going to be all that surprised at.
The running back group looks pretty good for you guys going forward, but of course, Todd Gurley not quite ready to go yet, going to miss the game this week. Trey Mason, I guess his status is up in the air. What's the story with running back right now?
Well, the story is that I'm looking forward to our 2016 running back that we're going to pick in the first round because we can't stop picking running backs. I think Pete was a second rounder. Zach Stacy was a fifth rounder. Trey Mason was a third rounder. Now Todd Gurley's the first rounder. They just keep adding more and more running backs. And oddly enough, not starting the ones that they pick. So when they drafted Isaiah Pede, he didn't start. When they drafted Zach Stacy, he didn't start in favor of Daryl Richardson. Daryl Richardson went to the Jets. The next year, Zach Stacy started instead of Trey Mason. Now Zach Stacy joined him on the Jets. Trey Mason and Todd Gurley are both out this weekend, so it's going to be Benny Cunningham, an undrafted free agent, and Isaiah Pede. It's laughable if it wasn't, you know, so incoherent. There's just no long-term plan at running back the last couple of years until, I guess, taking Todd Gurley at number 10. It's one of those things where the investment makes sense if he pans out, but if he doesn't, it's one of those reaches for a position that you just don't get a lot of returns on for most of the league. Obviously, you guys and Marshawn Lynch are a bit of an anomaly, but for the rest of the league and for a Rams team that had other positions that I think most fans wanted to address before running back, given what we got out of some guys the last couple of years, I'm hoping Todd Gurley makes good on him or it's going to look really bad for the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I was very vocal about how much I disagreed with the pick and you on the draft day, and you were here with us talking about it as well. And I was just shocked when I looked at this just a moment ago and saw that Isaiah Pede was still on the roster. I was just shocked. I thought that he had been cut or let go a long time ago. But I guess that, as Danny pointed out, you know, there are some injury concerns there, so you got to have somebody. Just not sure what to expect from Pede. One of the things that obviously the Rams, as we were talking about, the Rams' biggest advantage is going to be on that defensive line versus our offensive line. But that being said, the Seahawks aren't exactly shabby in that area either. They've got an incredible looking front seven that could cause a lot more damage than any front seven that Pete Carroll's had in his 4 years.
I was like, Kenny, come on, man. I know we're on a field goals podcast, but let's not change it that bad. Come on, dude.
You don't know what to expect from the – you don't know about the Seahawks defensive line? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know about the Seahawks offensive line, and I don't think Seahawks fans do either. I thought you were saying that you guys Well, you guys may have a great defensive line in St. Louis, but the Seahawks offensive line is ready for
them. No. Our offensive line is not good. What I was saying is, on the flip side, our defensive line is very good, and I'm wondering how your offensive line is looking as far as being able to block them.
Yeah, I'm worried, but it's inexperienced. And that's part of the problem when you overdraft running back and overdraft cornerback like they did the last 3 years is they've avoided offensive line draft selections. And they tried to fill it through free agency with guys like Jake Long at left tackle and Scott Wells at center. Obviously, Dave and Joseph on a one-year flyer last year that didn't work. But they never went after any kind of long-term replacements that were of any real value or potential. And so they had to go into this year's draft desperate with all these holes to fill, and they went ahead and drafted five different linemen, I think, throughout their draft class, and that is a ton as UDFAs going into camp. So we'll have to see. I mean, you've got Rob Havenstein starting at right tackle out of Wisconsin as a rookie. Jamon Brown, who played right tackle at Louisville, will be starting at left guard. We just selected Tim Barnes, who's got limited experience. He won a three-way battle for the starting center gig. And perhaps more confusing is the fact that the five-man look of the offensive line with the positions that they'll be playing in, they haven't really practiced that until this week. The entirety of the offseason, they were going through a three-man rotation at center, and Jamon Brown was at right guard while Roger Saffold was at left guard. They kind of surprisingly flipped the guards this week while they named a starting center, so they haven't had a ton of time for those five guys to work together as a unit, especially the three on the interior. So I don't think Rams fans are incredibly confident, especially in a game like this with the front seven that you guys offer, especially with the safety cover that you have, Cam Chancellor or not. I think we're just going to have to see if this trial by fire is going to pay some dividends down the road, because I don't think it's going to be very pretty in week one.
I know that some of the people that I've talked to still love Greg Robinson. So do you think he can take that next step to becoming an elite left tackle?
Well, he's got potential, and obviously when you say elite, it's laden with so many PFT commenter kind of, you know, undertones. I think the question is what it is that you want out of somebody and what they give you. I think the Rams are going to really lean heavily on the run game, especially early on in games this year, and I think that's certainly an area that he's more proficient at in terms of blocking versus pass protection. The question is, how do you get to a level of, let's say, elite run blocking with adequate pass protection on a consistent basis? That's what we didn't see from Greg Robinson. We've seen flashes of, you know, a top-tier run blocker. We haven't seen flashes of a top-tier pass blocker, but that's okay if you're just adequate enough to maintain the level of play. And look, with Nick Foles, I don't think the Rams are going to be running a ton of seven-step drops. They know what they have on the offensive line and what the risk is, so I think it's going to be one of those things where they manage and temper expectations as they try to work in some more complexity into the offense and get those guys some more experience, since they really haven't had a ton of snaps five-man wide.
You mentioned Nick Foles, and it's funny because we were like 20 minutes into this already and haven't asked about your quarterback, who Seahawks fans don't really know a whole lot about Foles at this point in terms of what he's done. I don't imagine a lot of them were heavily scouting Rams preseason games. So can you tell us what he kind of did during the preseason and what the outlook is for him?
So the answer of what he did in the preseason is not much. didn't get a ton of time. There were some really bad plays, a couple bad reads. What I think is more worrisome is that there were some plays where the team kind of failed around him. There was a play where he threw a perfect 8-yard ball to tight end Jared Cook, who just muffed it. It bounced off his hands, and it resulted in a pick-six interception. And that's the kind of thing where if you're bringing in a new quarterback and you've got veteran players who have been on the team for a while, you expect them to bring the new guys along. And to have a play like that is kind of the most worrisome thing I think we saw
right from
the offense. Outside of, you know, misplaced passes or anything like that, those are the kind of things that you expect them to get worked out with more reps and those kind of things, especially for somebody who had the kind of season Nick Foles had with the Eagles in 2013. In terms of what we're going to see, I don't know that they're going to ask him to do a lot, especially early on in the season, only because they know that it's such a high-risk proposition when you've got the inexperienced offensive line, you've invested this much in running backs, you got the defense that you do. The worst thing you can do is put your defense in a position where it's giving up points instead of at least trying to play some kind of a field position, grinded out game. So I expect more of that at least on Sunday, and I think I'd be surprised if Nick Foles is out there kind of, you know, gunslinger mentality, or if that's even part of the script.
I don't know if this – I'm just kind of curious how it's going to play out, because you've talked about the inexperience of the offensive line and how they're still being jumbled around. And I'm just looking at your stats from last season, and surprisingly, this is sort of the opposite of what I was expected. But almost the same amount of snaps, Austin Davis and Sean Hill. Austin Davis was sacked 29 times, and Sean Hill was sacked only 18 times. So it was the older guy that managed to get sacked less. Is that because he got rid of the ball quicker? What was what do you think were the problems or whatever that led to one guy being able to – who's going to be – what kind of play is going to be most successful behind this line?
Yeah, I think the bigger problem is when you've got all your snaps divvied up between Sean Hill and Austin Davis.
That's a pretty good problem to have.
You're pretty much guaranteed, you know, to have issues. I think part of the problem was protection, and you saw that at the end of the first half in Game 1 against the Vikings, where Sean Hill got flushed out and then tried to throw the ball away and threw just a stupid interception at the end of the first half. And for a veteran with his experience, that's the kind of thing where if you're not willing to know, if you're not capable of knowing that's what is you can't give away, then there's no reason to give you any credit for veteran experience. They went to Austin Davis thereafter and tried it for a couple of weeks, but he's got a very inadequate arm in terms of arm strength, so he can't make a ton of deep throws, doesn't have a lot of zip on the ball. Pretty much his game was reading the defense and then kind of letting guys make plays in front of him when there was an opportunity, when the running game was cutting things down to, you know, second and five, third and three, those kind of things. The problem was when the run game stopped working and teams started loading the box a bit more and getting a bit more aggressive, everything just broke down. I don't know that there's really a workable playbook until they find out what they've got on the offensive line and with Todd Gurley, only because with the other weapons, they're so dependent on other factors. They're not the kind of independent offense in a passing game between the offensive line and the wide receivers where, like the Falcons or maybe like Tampa Bay, where you say you can put the game on our back and we're going to carry the rest of the offense into the other facets of the game. The Rams just don't have that.
And I mean, you kind of talked about you hit on this already, but what is the Rams' identity on offense? I mean, I guess you would just say you don't really know yet because of the offensive line, but kind of what do you expect for their identity?
Yeah, so the last couple of years, I'd say the identity has been toilet paper kind of rubbed with a little soap, and then you just kind of dunk it in a cereal bowl and wait until it turns into that mush. Like when you forgot the toilet paper and you come back and you're like, toilet paper that's been there for 2 hours. Like,
Jesus.
It was to kind of wear you down and let you forget about it, and then when you notice it, it's like, oh, I totally forgot. But now, I think it's, you know, it's going to be a running game. They've got some semblance of a real identity. I just worry about how effective it's going to be, and especially the era that they're trying to run it with. Essentially, they're going to try some outside zone blocking schemes with inside power and then mix in some kind of a tempered passing game, you know, short to intermediate to keep Tavon Austin relevant and keep defenses honest with him while being able to work the intermediate field with Brian Quick, Kenny Britt, Stedman Bailey, whatever mix of wide receivers they get going. I don't know. It's just it's one of those things where, and part of it is being a Rams fan where you've seen your offense in the bottom half for the last 12 years. You're looking at the defense and saying, you guys can't screw up. You've got to win games for us because this offense isn't going to do it. And then you just go to the offense and say, just let them win the game. It's kind of like the old Bad News Bears when Kelly comes in to catch the balls from center field in front of the right fielder. Let the defense catch the ball in front of you, offense. Just don't mess it up for the defense. Let them do most of the work, and we'll get out of here with a win, and then we'll worry about the egos later.
Just overall, and I think that I can sort of gather from, you know, everything else that you said that I can kind of probably guess what your answer is going to be, but just overall, how would you say, because they did make a lot of moves this offseason, how would you grade the performance of the general manager, Les Snead?
This offseason I thought was one of their better offseasons. The problem was they were cornered by their previous offseasons. When you trade up for Tavon Austin, when you avoid taking offensive linemen, when you go next year putting all your chips in on Sam Bradford and not getting a backup quarterback with any potential, they kind of had their hand forced this year. What I thought was funny is that everything they did this year repudiated everything they did last year. So last year they went all in on Sam Bradford coming off of an ACL tear. This year they traded Sam Bradford away after an ACL tear. Last year they brought in Case Keenum, selected Austin Davis at the back of the QB depth chart and traded away Case Keenum. This year, they traded for Case Keenum, giving a seventh-round pick away, and allowed him to beat out Austin Davis for essentially the backup spot. For the offensive line, last year they rode almost with everybody they had except selected an end-of-his-career right guard. This year they spent half or more of their draft picks on offensive linemen just trying to build it on the fly and fit a bunch of square pieces into circular holes. It's one of those things where at least they're doing it now, but if they hadn't waited so damn long to do it, it would have been a lot easier and probably a lot prettier, and you wouldn't have had to have spent so many mid-round or early-round picks on guys that are either no longer with the team or not functional pieces. When you look at, you know, so many of the cornerbacks, when you spend that much on cornerbacks and you get E.J. Gaines as a late-round hit, it almost it begs the question, well, why are you spending so much on cornerbacks when you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a functional offensive line, you don't have anybody with any consistency at the wide receiver spot? Maybe we should stop getting first-round defensive linemen. I get it. You like sacks. You like pressure. But we kind of get that already. Maybe let's address some of the other areas of the team. So it's a bit of the same, but in a different way. And again, with so many new parts, I think it's difficult to kind of grade Les Snead's. And to be fair, it's not as much Les Snead as it is really Jeff Fisher kind of driving the train and Les Snead taking credit for it for the GM spot. We're just going to have to see how it works out because it's a new product that we haven't really seen before.
The Seahawks just recently, you know, drafted Frank Clark, and fans are really excited about him, you know, through the preseason. He looked really strong. I remember last year Aaron Donald had a freakish preseason and then carried that over into the regular season, had a really great year. Tell me a little about Aaron Donald. Like, how is he so good? How does he win? And what kind of, like, where do they line him up? Things like that. Like, what can you expect from them from him this week?
It's just quickness and hands. I mean, if you look at him, he's not a big defensive tackle. He's nowhere near as strong as some of his peers, even on the Rams. But he's just so quick off the snap, and he creates these body angles where, you know, when a center or guard, because they move him a little bit in between the three and two tech, where if no matter how you try to get your hands on him, he's going to kind of allow you, kind of like a bullfighter almost sometimes, to pass underneath him and then come on the outside, or sometimes just, you know, he'll just rip you with a rip move and come on the inside, but it's so quick that before you realize what you've done, he's already in the backfield. And the great thing is it affects both the run and the pass game, so it's not as if he's a great pass rusher or he's a dominant run stuffer. It's just that he's so quick at shedding blockers that he can have such an impact in both facets. He's really a special guy, but it's because he's a different kind of player.
And we're going to let Joe go here in a minute, but I just want to make sure that we cover the most important base, which is, you know, getting to some sort of a prediction. Let's just say this. If the Rams do beat the Seahawks on Sunday, what are the odds that you think that could happen? And, you know, what do you think the cause will be? What is going to be the thing that they really do better than Seattle on Sunday?
So here's the thing. You guys know I'm a complete imbecile. And I know you guys appreciate it. So here's what I'm going to say. I think there's 100% chance the Rams beat you guys on Sunday. Then in a week, they come to D.C., and they're going to lose at 21 to Kirk Cousins and Washington. It's the most inexplicable back-to-back performance that anybody can have of the 2015 season, which is exactly why the Rams are going to do it.
I like your honesty. I think I would agree. I like the fact that you're using past performance to prove the future predictions. This is what people forget, you know. Every time someone comes in, and this moment, you know, and it's all about management and ownership and coaches, but every time someone comes in and it's like, oh, the Rams are looking up, and, you know, no offense to Rams fans, but because Seahawks were in that way for a very long time, but it's like, oh, the Rams are coming up, and it's like, no. Every time the Rams are coming up, they go 2-14. So I'm not saying they're going to go 2-14. I think they're much better than that, but I always do expect that they're going to flash, you know, that hope and that brilliance, and then just pull the rug right from under you.
Yeah, pulling the rug is a good analogy. I might add some wet toilet paper in there somewhere because I think they're just kidding. I don't know how. I mean, I'll give that to screenwriter somewhere. Kenny, you've got skills. Work in some wet toilet paper somewhere into that analogy, and I'll make it work.
Okay, I'll work on the toilet paper.
Wet toilet paper. Wet.
Well, I'll work on the wet, dirty toilet paper. Was it dirty?
I mean, it depends. You're the screenwriter about the exposition. You can get the conclusion however you want, but at the outset, it's just wet, old, surprising toilet paper that you forgot about. Like, oh, Rodney McLeod, I remember you. Oh,
will do. Thanks, Joe. You can follow him on Twitter at 3K underscore. Where did you come up with that?
It's pathetic, so I'd rather talk about wet toilet paper. I'll be honest.
TurfShowTimes.com at 3K underscore. Joe McAtee, thank you. Joe Manatee, thank you for coming on the show to talk Rams. You give it as well as you take it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that was our interview with Joe. Danny, let's get some of your thoughts on the Rams, because you know pretty well a lot about other teams, so, and especially ones in the NFC West. So what do you obviously, let's skip past the defensive line, offensive line, because that's the obvious answer. What are you most worried about with the Rams?
With the Rams, the biggest worry to me is what Nick Foles is going to be. You know, if he's going to be the guy who was balls out really good for the Eagles back in 2013, like he basically was, he like set records for quarterback efficiency. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
If he's going to be that guy, that's a little worrisome, obviously, because, you know, the Rams have kind of always just been like a quarterback away from being really good. And so if he's the guy, that's kind of, you know, nerve wracking, but, based on, you know, after what Joe told us, I'm not really too worried about that yet. You know, we've talked about how Chip Kelly can kind of like his offense can kind of make quarterbacks. It can be their quarterback's best friend. And I don't know if that's really what's going to happen here in St. Louis. So Nick Foles is the big X factor for them. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely going to be dangerous, you know, with how inexperienced the Seahawks offensive line is. I mean, Justin Britt's inexperienced at guard. You know, Drew Nowak is just all of a sudden now the center. And to think of Aaron Donald, that's my biggest concern, is to think of Aaron Donald going up against those guys and that interior pressure that they're going to provide against Marshawn Lynch and when rushing at Russell Wilson. So yeah, I think Darrell Bevell is a good offensive coordinator that will be able to draw up some plays that get enough gains in order for the Seahawks to get the win. And that's just the other thing, is that I think that there's a chance that Nick Foles gets sacked 10 times in this game.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, I could really see them just destroying those linemen on the
Rams. Yeah, I mean, it could be kind of like that with both sides. It'll be really interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be a sack city.
But, you know, Nick Foles threw two interceptions in 2013, as you said, one of the most efficient seasons of all time, and I could see him throwing more than that on Sunday. Or, you know, maybe he does have a good game. I think that their receiving core is really interesting because they do have a lot of talent there. And it's just that they've never figured it out. And they haven't had good quarterbacks and they haven't had good offensive line play. So if Nick Foles can be a good quarterback, do you think that you would have opted for Foles over Sam Bradford?
No, I think I would have gone with Bradford. I think there was a lot of history with Bradford in St. Louis that, you know, kind of maybe it was like needed a new, scenery or whatever to really excel. But I think Bradford is more talented.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Better arm. He has, he's more athletic. He's just all around better to me. But obviously, he can't stay healthy. That's the big thing.
Yeah, it's we'll see if he can stay healthy in Philadelphia, because I do have him picked as a Pro Bowler this season. That's how far.
Doesn't really surprise me that wouldn't surprise me if that happens. You know, he's got to stay healthy, but just based on how he's looked in the preseason, like he could be the comeback player of the year.
The comeback kid, Sammy Brad. So yeah, that's it. The game is 10 a.m. on Sunday in St. Louis, a place that they did struggle last year. Hopefully they've figured out some of those special teams issues.
Yep. Or,
you know, yeah, so they'll be able to figure it out. Obviously, you know, Danny, a lot of the guys that the Seahawks kept, you know, it's not just they'll be improved on special teams because of Tyler Lockett, but they also got really heavy on the guys that are going to be blocking and tackling on special teams, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, the core special teams guys this year are going to be, well, especially early on, are going to be so much better than they were at this point last year when they played in St. Louis. Obviously, Derek Coleman broke his foot in warmups, and I think that really screwed with him. I think, he ended up having to get replaced doing all his jobs after everything that they've done in practice that week. He kind of losing him was huge.
I heard you say that on the Deep Balls podcast, and I couldn't help but think to myself, hold on, Danny, we haven't had walkthroughs yet. I'm like worried that we're going to be like, well, that was when they had an injury in walkthroughs. Shit.
Yeah. Good point.
I hope that doesn't happen again.
I mean, that was a freak thing. So odds are good that it won't, but yeah, I mean, God, that sucked. I remember, it didn't seem like a whole lot at the beginning, but it's like, they'd love Coleman on special teams. He's like, he's like maybe one of their top special teams players. And we know how important special teams are to Picaro. And obviously we saw how they can turn a game. So, hopefully they can be a little bit better this year. I think Kelsey McCray is really known for his special teams, and they, I imagine they'll get him involved early on that. Kevin Pierre-Louis looks like he could be a really good special teamer.
It's interesting that the Seahawks traded for a Kelsey and traded away a Christine.
That's true. I didn't even think of that.
But just as you said, Kelsey, and I was like, that's a girl.
Wait, they also signed a carry.
And they signed a carry. God. I love it. There's also a Danielle in the NFL.
There is. It's an interesting ambiguity.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe let's just leave it at that.
That's a good stopping point, yeah.
As often, Jesus Christ, Ken. As usual, remember that Real in the Field Goals is brought to you by the Ballard Agency. That jingle, you already know it. It's been stuck in your head all episode long. Sing it at work. It's 425-454-3510. Tell them the field goal sent you. And that's insurance, everybody. The Ballard Agency, ballardagency.com. You can follow Danny at Field Goals. You can follow me at Kenneth Arthur S. I'm breaking news, just as I did today, after talking to Marshawn Lynch's agent, that he was not going to skip, just like Stephen A. Smith hinted that he would. I was a little worried because Stephen A. Smith got a couple things right recently.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what he got right. Everyone was like, holy crap, he was right.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
If someone's still listening, write that into the comments.
Yes, please. And also subscribe to, we'll subscribe to Real and the Field Goals next week.
Yeah. We're close to having it all worked out.
Subscribe to 3000 NFL Mock Draft. Subscribe to what you're already subscribed to, which is this. I hope you are. You could be listening on YouTube. I get it. Not everyone has an iPhone or iTunes and all that kind of stuff. But just keep listening and send us your money. We'll accept it. And yeah, going to have a big game and then come back on Sunday and listen to the Instant Reactions podcast. For Danny Kelly, this is Kenneth Arthur. Bye.